Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Happy Monday and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Michelle Pache, and I'm here today with Dr. Rice as host. We warmly welcome you to the show and thank you for choosing to be with us. Today is February 17th, 2014. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1 and that puts you into queue to talk with Dr. Rice. We encourage you to call in with your comments or questions because then you actively and strengthen your process. So now let's welcome Michael in the process of learning and practicing forgiveness.
Now, young lady, thank you for that introduction. It's a delight to have this opportunity. We're honored and privileged to be able to share this space with everyone that calls into the show and listens or listens to the archives later on down the road. We're appreciative of the opportunity. And Jean and I are actually sitting in Earthsayer Health Food Store in Asheville, North Carolina. And we're sitting here with Terry Bowling, who called in last week and started off, initiated a challenge. And we happen to be privileged also to be sitting with Dale Allen Hoffman and his wife and his little sweetheart. What age is she, mine now? 2.5. So we're sitting here at the table having lunch and keeping our voices a little quiet because there are a few other people in the room. It's kind of a cozy spot. And so I'm going to turn the phone over to Terry and have him share his experience and his challenge with you if you weren't listening last week. Terry Bowling.
Hey, guys. I guess it was about 20 days ago. It's more like it was about 3 weeks ago when I put this challenge out. Because I'm in already into the 24th chapter when we go through the worksheet. And the challenge was just to do a minimum of 5 pages a day reading in the Why Again book. And by doing that within just a matter of 26 days, it'd be through the whole book. And you can start over again and come back and see what you've learned in that 26 days. So at the same time, the partner that I chose to offer support and accountability in this agreement, reading the book and all, we upped it a notch by adding the worksheet page to do the worksheet page. You stay a minimum of one. You can do more if you want. And that along with the pages of reading. So, and we re-up it each week and check in and offer support and feedback. And it's a powerful way to engage in the work and to keep it manageable. So as stuff does come up, you have the resource there and some assistance and support to help you move on to it. So that's the challenge. And we're going to be jumping back in and offering on a continuing basis. We can do a worksheet challenge, keep it at a manageable level, and continue cycling through reading another book. So that's it.
Cool. So what inspires you to put that challenge out to your friends? You're just telling me that there are some people you've been inviting and who are starting to listen and do more of the work in Asheville after a couple of years of talking to yourself about it, more or less. But what inspires you to do that? What's your experience that has you see value in that?
Value, what kind of that I've experienced and received is beyond measure. And understanding how the mind works at a deeper and deeper level, and knowing that all my challenges are going to come up, and that either I'm moving forward or moving backward, you know, is the way I view things. And with the foundation that I've gotten through doing your work for years and the 12-step work that I was involved in and still am involved in that goes along with this, and I just got to the point where I truly understand that it's either forward or backwards. And, I like the forward motion. And even though there's still been challenges and all that have come up in my life over the years, my experience of those challenges is completely different than what it was prior to having the tools to deal with it. And it's available.
And about probably a year ago, I don't know if you were familiar with it, but we did a couple of shows. I don't remember how many shows we did. And we tied the worksheet into the 12 steps and the whole process of the work. And last week, now the week before last, we did three shows based on the new essay in Chapter 3, in Lesson 3 in Laws of Living. And we actually built in to Lesson 3 a whole inventory process that's pretty, as I said, when you reach Essay 3, I think you'll enjoy it. But it really, I mean, it's set up with check marks on it, and it really goes into, okay, if I'm in denial and dissociation, what are the signs that I'm doing that? And there are about three pages of what does blockage of truth mean? What does it look like? And how do I tell when I'm there? What are the signals? So I think you'll find those enjoyable once you get back to that. And Terry did Laws of Living. How many years ago is that, Terry? Probably 5, 6 years, maybe 7.
I've been here
5 years. So we just gave Terry a new copy, the latest version of Laws of Living, and so I'll look forward to hearing your feedback on that. And Dale Allen Hoffman is sitting across the table from us with his lovely bride, Loretta, and, of course, Shemaya. Dale, do you have anything you'd like to throw into the mix at this moment? As you sit there with your mouth full, and I get right in on your food. How cool is that? Anyway, so let's say hello and see if Dr. Tim is available. Is Tim there, Michelle? Hello, Michelle.
Yeah, Dr. Tim is here.
Let's say hello to the young man then.
Do you have me turned on?
Yeah.
You are. You're on, sir. We can hear you.
Delightful. Well, I heard you say that you weren't speaking up because it's an intimate space, but what you can do to speak up will help for the recording. I was able to follow pretty much because I was listening very closely, but it's quite quiet. We're doing beautifully here. We're having another snow event, and we're all prepared for it because we've practiced all winter long. And today in sessions, it's been amazing. People are absolutely lighting up when they're finding out they have the ability to change and control how they respond to those events in their lives. I think out of the many things I could share from today, I think the one I would share is, aside from I have a question, somebody was reading your or listening to the shows about the laws of living.
Right.
And she emailed me a question. Maybe I should ask you that since you just mentioned it. And the question is whether or not these events or this series of things that comes up in laws of living, if they have to happen in order.
You mean the healing process as people go
well,
through it?
Well, she was looking at the 12 steps to the blockage of truth, and her question
right.
is, do they have to happen in order? Is one step building on another, or can you recognize it at any point and heal, or do you have to go through all of the steps before you heal? So apparently she was reading the 12 steps to blockage of truth as though it was a ladder that you climb up and then you have to come back down if you're going to heal.
No, my take would be you look at wherever you are in those steps, and the idea of having that material is to build the brain cells for what blockage of truth looks like. And once you've got those brain cells, if you spot yourself, I'm doing, you know, here I am right square, sit in the middle of number 3 or number 6 or number 10, start where you are and go through those layers. So. So no, there's not a hierarchy. A lot of the blockage of truth issues that we tend to face reflect what we learned and what we experienced energetically through the dynamics of our power person relationships. And so, depending what if one had a power person, what the power person's favorite method of blockage was, a really popular one with children especially is blame. You know, the adult who says, I'm only feeling this because of what you did, kid. You, 3-year-old, you're the cause of what's wrong in my life now. And so if one lives with a power person who holds that dynamic, then you can guarantee that every time they turn around and the stress is up and the chips are down, they find somebody to blame. Somebody else is the problem in their lives. It's all somebody else's fault. And the reason why it's such a challenge to get free of that until you just get conscious of, here are the things that are earmarked that I'm doing this, the mind verifies. Like, let's say, take that particular example, the power person who blamed the child. So now the child, 50 years later, is the adult who blames everybody. Who, whenever something's wrong, they look outward and look for somebody to blame, whether it's a child, whether it's a spouse, whether it's the employer or the government or whoever it is. That's why I'm feeling this way. Then it's difficult to crack that blockage of truth unless you have a really serious commitment to love of truth, because the mind shows you evidentially that what you believe is really true. I mean, once I go into the words of denial, you know, I'm feeling this because you said that, my mind follows and generates the literal picture world that I see out of those words. That, you know, when you recognize there's some Harvard research we've talked about before, and you brought in some other research that all ties it together, but when you recognize that we're seeing on a conscious level 9 bits of data out of 10,000 brain cells firing, then what we're looking at is evidence, and our words are what give the mind the permission to use evidence. So when my words say, you made me mad, my mind really creates pictures where you are the one who makes my mad. And I really believe that. And until I understand that, if I'm in pain, it's my thinking that's off base, there's something out of place in me, then I can't crack that, because my mind is going to keep showing me it's hallucination. And that's why one of the points in those 12 steps of blockage of truth is that if there's hostility or fear happening in me, I'm in blockage of truth. Because if I were functioning as a true human being, and of course our definition of a human being is hold a newborn, you know what a human being is. If I was functioning as a human being, I would not tolerate any form of hostility or fear. If I'm tolerating it, it's because it's in me, and my mind is showing me that somebody else is to blame. So that would be my take on where one needs to go, and whichever symptom is showing up, use that to lead oneself back to the core of what's underneath the hallucination, that, of course, it's all somebody else's fault.
Okay, so, yeah, so but before you go anywhere, this ties right into one of the other things I was going to share from this morning. It's your talk about the power person dynamic. So one of the people I'm working with has had to go to a class because he's getting divorced. And the class is about how to handle the family dynamic through a divorce so that you are loving and respectful and that you're not doing damage to the kids more than is necessary. And so he went to this class, and he sat there and he said, oh my God, every single thing that these people are telling me that I should not do with my daughter, my mother did to me. She did that to me, she did that to me, she did that to me. And he said he had his rage triggered big time. So I used what I've used for years and then refined a little bit since meeting you and talking about the power person dynamics. But the thing that I use with people in that situation is to say, fortunately in this case, he has a daughter that he loves dearly. So I asked him to think what someone would have to do to him or threaten him with in order to get him to mistreat his daughter the way he was mistreated. And he said, well, nothing. There's nothing anybody could do to me. You can think of the most horrible things, and I would never do to my daughter what was done to me. And then I say, okay, now understand that that your mother, who did all these horrible things to you, she began as loving and as innocent as your daughter. And without the resources that you had of support from an outside source, she had at least as much, if not more, done to her than was done to you. And when you can move to that space and see her as the innocence of life and love and creation that your daughter is, and then extend love to her through that place in you that's hurting because of her actions, you get a chance to heal, and you open a space for her to heal. Maybe you could address the power person dynamics. Power person had a power person had a power person.
One of the things that I've always been into is music, and oftentimes when I get intuition, my intuition shows up in the form of a song. And as you started to talk about that, up came Hank Williams Jr.'s voice singing. You know, it's a family tradition. I get drunk and sing all night long. It's a family tradition. And these family traditions are passed on because they're literally energetically, genetically integrated into us at conception, and then through our environmental exposure to that power person. And so that everybody's clear about the power person. A power person is someone in your life that had more power over your life than you did and wasn't functioning as a human being, wasn't functioning as the active presence of love. And the behaviors that come out of that dynamic have been going on in most bloodlines. If you could trace them back, you'd find they've been going on for probably hundreds of generations and have been reinforced. And most people don't believe that they do those things that their power person did to them because they're in blockage of truth about it. They can't see it. So what happens is their mind, and you know, there's a small example of that in the book where the character Richard goes into a restaurant. He's going to have a cup of tea, and the tea is spilled onto his saucer, and he's got a nice clean white shirt on, and he's getting ready to take a sip of it, and the waitress comes over and takes it from in front of him, and he just goes, you know, bizarre. He's angry, and the waitress, the reality her mind is showing her is, I'm going to protect my customer from spilling this tea on his shirt. The character Richard in the book sees something being taken away from him, and his anger and his lashing out at her is just a way of protecting himself. So he never got angry with her. He never lashed out at her. He just protected himself. And so the mind always has a rationalization, and you know, we look at that word ration, lies. And those rationalizations have been going on forever. And I think if you talk to 99.9% of parents, they would all say, I loved and cherished my child so completely, I would never do anything to hurt them. And in their minds, they have not. Oh, maybe there was the occasional slip where, okay, I realize I lost it, but otherwise I would never. And yet there's been, for most people who haven't looked inside themselves and resolved their power person issues, there's been a whole series of events that have been done to the child, just like it's been done in the family tradition for so long. And when one starts to go inside and unwind and resolve those things, then they are able to consciously choose to behave differently. But rare is the person on first look that believes that that horrible thing that their power person did to them, the thing they detested the most, rare is the person that believes that they've ever done that to their child, and 100% of them have. Or if they haven't done it in fact, they've done it in their minds. There was a fellow in South Florida that actually runs a 12-step website, and he shared with me when I was talking about this power person dynamic. He said, well, no, that's not correct because my father beat me my whole life long. I mean, he just was brutally, physically abusive. And I've never laid a hand on my son. And I could have knocked this gentleman over with a feather when I said, okay, I hear you. You've had enough self-control to never touch your son. And how often do you have to stop yourself from raising your fists yet today? And he was just like, took a deep breath and just about fell over. It's like he still fights the battle of his power person inside. Never touched his son, never was physically abusive. But his mind still serves up the behavior. And the reason for that is because, unfortunately, he doesn't have forgiveness. And I want to just say to everybody, if you're new to the show, when I talk about he didn't have forgiveness, now he's involved in the 12 steps. And, you know, I mean, he runs a big website and runs groups and all of that. But the forgiveness he's been taught is, oh, I'm going to let them off the hook. Okay, I'm going to look back at my power person, and I'm going to let my power person off the hook for the terrible thing they did to me. Well, we're going to suggest you never let your power person off the hook for what they did to you. Or if you choose to do that, that's cool. But then what you want to do is actually engage in forgiveness work. Letting somebody off the hook for what they've done is pardoning them, and that's nice. But if you substitute the word removal for forgiveness, then you want to go the next step of going inside yourself and removing the pain, the trauma, the energetic insult of the power person dynamic from inside of your own tissue structure so that you don't have to. And this guy that I'm talking about, he'd been sober for over 30 years. You know, he's in his 60s. And he still, at that point, is fighting the battle. So he started doing the step and, you know, got to his fourth step and, you know, and then forgiveness decades earlier. He still fights the battle of having control of his fists and not hit. And so what we're inviting people into doing, as opposed to letting someone off the hook, is literally actually going inside themselves, becoming directly acquainted with the energy that drives those power person behaviors, and literally remove them, forgive them. And so that's where we want to head. And Jeannie has a comment for us. Jeannie?
Her mother. Oh, okay. Now I'm unmuted, so you can hear me now. Thank you, Michelle. So she says that it's been 9 years almost since her mother, at her dad's funeral, said, I am done with you. And so she was raised in the school of honoring your parents. And that has really been a challenge because they have nothing to do with her. So she's tried to, based on what we have taught, let me change the word try, she has attempted to put forth to them showing love towards them by, you know, sending them small gifts or cards or whatever. And she has noticed a softening within herself, but it hasn't changed anything much on the other end. And I was going to share that several years ago when we were in Seattle, I worked with a woman, and our worksheet at that time, down further down in it, when you canceled the goal, it had a part about something you saw in them that was loving. And the lady that I worked with could not think of a single thing loving about her mother. And it took several, probably five times working with her, till I finally said, okay, did she never ever, like, bake you cookies or do something when you were small? And she goes, oh, yeah, one time she did. And I said, okay, well, hold on to that one thought that there was one time in your life that she baked cookies just for you.
You just brought up sadness that someone would have to struggle that hard to think of something loving from their parent. And I know there's a lot of it out there. But she was finally able to hold on to that. And it couldn't change anything between her and her mother because her mother's already dead. But after a time just holding on to that one memory, she was able to soften within herself and change what was going on for her. And that's what the honoring is. It's not for the parent. It's for you.
So in honoring
yeah,
well,
we'll
you, Jeannie,
with you on that one, but it touches a space in all of us, and so if you do forgiveness work in order to change something outside of you, then the trick of the mind is I still believe the problem's inside of me, the cause of the pain is outside of me. It's still denial. I'm doing it so they'll change. I have to hold to the belief that they're the problem in my life and the cause of my pain. What we're inviting people to go to is, I am the cause of my pain here, now, today. They are not the cause of my pain. Have they done crazy things, off-the-wall things, inappropriate things, unconscionable things, maybe even illegal things? Yes, let's acknowledge that they did. But what they did isn't the cause of what I'm experiencing today. And the commandment that says, honor thy father and thy mother, has a very powerful promise attached to it. It says, so that thy days will be long upon the earth, that you get to extend your lifespan by offering in action the presence of love to your power person. And as you offer the action of love toward them, you reach into the part of you that otherwise you can't access or you don't normally access. And, of course, it's accessed, whether it's conscious or not, when you're in the presence of that power person, whether physically or mentally. And so when I'm in their presence and I can reach out however they respond, you know, I might, you know, come into their presence and reach out and express with a hug, and they may push me away or slap me away. But I benefit being in their presence and having the pain that I carry resonated by them. I've benefited because by passing the active presence of love through my physiology, it begins the healing process in me. They may never respond to that. And then again, I can tell you a thousand stories about how just gigantic turnarounds happened overnight in those situations. But it's certainly a process. And, you know, the whole, that commandment is not anything about theology or anything about religion. It's just simple physiology. Do you want every cell in your structure to dance and sing with the joy and the presence of love in it? If you do, then in every circumstance you look at, you've got to take on one of the attributes of the Creator. What's this attribute of the Creator? That the Creator is love. Now, there's a parable where Yeshua compares and uses the rain as an example. And he says, the rain falls on the just and the unjust. So here's an attribute of the Creator. Whether, you know, and men talk about the Creator being pleased or displeased, that's all men's projection. It's got nothing to do with the Creator. The Creator isn't capable of displeased. That's not what love does. But the Creator, it says, allows rain to fall on the just or the unjust. He doesn't say, I'm not putting any rain on your front because I don't like you to offend me today. You can't offend the Creator. It's not possible. That's the story of men, because men are offended. But if you choose to open your mind to recognize that if you hold that which is less loving you and you offer that to anyone, including your power person, then you just reinforce that whole energetic dynamic in yourself. And we're looking to support people in heavy choice to be able to reverse that process and offer it even when every cell in their structure is screaming to go in the other direction. And so oftentimes we'll ask people, well, you know, why did you do this? And so why did you do what you just did? That didn't look very nice. And the response is kind of dumbfounded look, and it's like, I don't know. Well, why don't you know? I don't know. You've got to stop. And then what follows usually is, well, I just felt like it. And it's time to stop doing what we feel like doing. If you do what you feel like doing, your behaviors will be being controlled from an unconscious level. What we're looking to do is to bring all behavior to a conscious level. One of the Beatitudes properly translated speaks in terms of those who are in possession and control of the source of your thinking. If you're not in possession and control of the source of your thinking, then you're being controlled unconsciously. And so what we suggest to people is that you select the standard you choose to live by. We suggest you take a look at the commitment on the website. I promise to trust you enough to tell you the truth, to be sweetness in your life and treat you lovingly, gently, and with respect. Take a look at that and see if that fits for you. When you're in your highest moment, if that fits for you when you're in your highest moment, then select and choose that as the form of behavior you're going to do. Once you do that, then everything that's less than that is going to start coming to the surface for healing. Now, do what you committed to do rather than what you feel like doing when you're in the pit. Because if you do what you feel like doing when you're in the pit, you're just going to reinforce the energy of the pit, and that's going to run more and more and more in your life. We're looking to support people in getting conscious of how to run their lives from a space of love and a commitment. You know, this person, quote-unquote, I say, offends me. That's denial. Nobody can offend me. Offense is something inside of me. Did they trigger it? Yes. If in the presence of my feeling offended, I keep my commitment to speak to them lovingly, gently, and with respect, who gets to heal? I do. I start to dissolve that reality in my physiology called offense. How many generations of offense do you suppose I'm going to have to look at? There's an interesting film out there. It was on the History Channel on the Hatfields and McCoys. I mean, here are two guys that were friends. They actually saved each other's lives in the Civil War. And then over a series of circumstances, mostly misunderstandings, they became vicious and vile enemies, like dozens of each other's family. And it was just, I think, in 2010 that the two families came back together and signed a peace treaty. Start to choose to function according to a set of principles. If you don't like the commitment, take a look at it. If there's some way to adjust it, if you want to really reinforce your existence as the active presence of love, as you were designed to be, then select something in harmony with that and commit yourself to it. And then no matter what your physiology says, no matter what your feelings say, you do what you said you're going to do. And when you do that, things start to shift and change. And it's quite a process because it's something that's been developing. You know, the feelings, the vicious behaviors, the rages, the guilt, the grief, the fears, they've been developing for generations and generations. And it's time for somebody to wake up enough to say, and I'm going to undo that. I'm going to walk out the other side, and I'm going to learn to fully, truly function as an actual human being. And that's where we want to go. That's what we want to support in the world. So are there any other comments in the chat room?
No, not on the show.
Well, our call-in number is 646-200-4169. If you'd like to ask a question, if you have any input on any of those ideas, and if you push 1, if you're in the phone queue, then Michelle will know that you want to chat, and she'll put your hand. She'll hit the button, and you'll be online with us. And beyond that, Dr. Phil, is that kind of
Michael?
With your,
Michael?
Yes, go ahead.
There is somebody with a hand up just now, and I think it's Joanna. Joanna,
oh, cool.
Is it you?
It's me.
Hi, how are you?
Very young lady.
Hello to everybody, and hello to Michael and Jeannie and Michelle and whoever else is there. My name is Joanna Burdorf, and I am in Missouri, where we have had enormous snow and bad weather, and today the sun has come out and the March winds are blowing all of those sad memories away. And I just wanted to share that. And to find out from Michael and Jeannie if they're going to Costa Rica tomorrow. Can you hear me?
Well, we're glad that the winds of warmth are starting to show up. It's definitely time. It's been a long winter for that for ourselves. But yes, actually, 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. 7 o'clock tomorrow morning, we fly out of Atlanta Airport, and got a stopover in Fort Lauderdale, and then we're off to Costa Rica. Arrive there around lunchtime tomorrow.
And when would you be back?
We're actually going to be in Costa Rica for 5 weeks, and then we're going to spend a week in Panama. There's a young lady there who has been doing our work for about the last 17 or 18 years, and she's invited us to come and do some workshops in Panama, so we'll be heading there. We don't have that all finalized yet, but once we do, it'll be on the website if there's anybody in Panama. It's a northern part of the country. I'm not even sure what the name of the town is at this point. I'm not very familiar with the geography. She just contacted us recently to ask if we do that. So we'll be there overall in Central America for about 6 weeks. And then we fly on March the 30th, or 28th, pardon me, into Las Vegas, Nevada. And we've got a couple of weeks of workshops in Las Vegas and Pahrump, Nevada, and then we'll be heading out to Washington State. So we're on the road, seriously.
Good. That's very good. I just wanted to know that. And I want to share something that may or may not fit into your dynamics, but I came to my consciousness out of my sleep the other morning, and I said to myself, I did not come to Earth this time to do psychological melodrama. I came to Earth to love and to share and to be happy and to be joyful. And that is just the place that I'm at, and I wanted to share that with people. And it's a wonderful place to be because life is rather short, and I think we are supposed to enjoy our lives. So that is just all I have to say. And to tell you bon voyage and have a glorious time.
Well, we will, and it sounds like that was a sweet awakening that morning, and we join you in that, and that is the reason why there are 7.5 billion people here, and we're going to see if we can tap as many of them on the shoulder as possible to and invite them into living in that fast.
That's marvelous. Well, fly high and have a marvelous time and touch a lot of hearts and open a lot of lives, and I'm always with you with love and joy and reinforcing and sending you lots and lots of support.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate you, young lady, and we'll look forward to seeing your sweet face when we get back to Theodosia.
Okay. Bon voyage. Right. Bye-bye.
Bye, Joanna.
So, Dr. Tim, welcome back. Oh, did you have something to share, Michelle?
Yeah, we've got another caller with a hand up if you'd like to move forward. I'm not sure if you want to talk to
him. Let's just check in and see if Dr. Tim has got anything else to add to the conversation that came from that question that he had from one of his clients.
Well, I would just say that's how I had viewed it, and I've read this The Laws of Living lesson several times, and to me it seemed like some of your other actually, the list of things that comes out of the Course for Healing and the one from the Laws of Living lecture, where it's kind of like a roadmap. And anytime I find myself, I wake up and realize I'm in a space I don't want to be. I can retrace my steps and move back through the healing process or the integrating process from that point. So that's what I was thinking, just what you said, that it doesn't have to be a set of sequential steps, but wherever I wake up and find myself in a space that's not loving, this is a roadmap for how I can find my way back.
Yay, absolutely, for sure. All right, well, let's see what our caller's got to say. Michelle?
Okay, so we've got a caller, and it's area code 347. Your mic is live. Hi.
Hi there, folks. How are you? I enjoyed the title of the show. I just happened upon it, so I apologize if I have missed, not if, I have missed some. I have a question because my father died a few weeks ago, and my mother has a belief in angels, etc. I do not, even though I used to. So I'm wondering, is your show about and I typed this in the chat, your show about angels, using the term loosely to refer to humans in our physical form who do good deeds, or is your show focused on the spiritual and or religious aspects of the word angels?
Well, actually, there are several different shows on this Angel Radio Network. Ours is called Mind Shifters, and it's primarily focused in the ancient Aramaic first century idea of forgiveness. So we don't really get into, that conversation has come up on occasion. In Aramaic, the word angels, more properly translated, means thoughts from God. But our work is that of looking at what's the part that I play in everything that's painful in my life, and how do I heal those parts of me that create situations out of pain that reinforce and tend to keep me in that pain. And in the first century, when one was invited to forgive, it had nothing whatsoever to do with the idea that we're fed in this culture today that says, in essence, you did something really terrible that caused all this pain inside of me. It's your fault that I'm feeling this, but I'll let you off the hook. I'll forgive you. And our message is that that has nothing whatsoever to do with forgiveness. We've been conned. And we've lost the real meaning of forgiveness through that con, because here we've got people running around, you caused my pain, I forgive you, I forgive you, I forgive you, I forgave them, I forgave myself. And anybody who's doing that is not entering into the deeper part of themselves where the root of their pain is and working through that pain. First century Aramaic forgiveness is the how-to of going inside the depth of oneself and removing pain, and recognize that when the culture, generally speaking, talks about forgiveness, they're really talking about pardoning. They're not talking about forgiveness at all.
So in my position, for example, I am an African American. Could I then say that you are suggesting that what my people have experienced and continue to experience from slavery to lynchings, et cetera, that pain itself is, how do we deal with that? Because I'm trying to personalize your theme to see how I can help myself. Because my feeling is if a human experiences pain, then our central nervous system triggers responses which were created in us. We didn't. And those responses tend to be fight or flight or speak up and say, hey, stop it. Are you suggesting that, for instance, my pain when the police beat me up several times for no reason, I can rationalize away in some way, or am I valid in my position that when they crack my, punch me in my testicles, et cetera, that my anger and frustration to this day has a valid place?
You know, if we go back into the ancient teachings, we hear a fellow named Job who's been through quite a bit of trauma, and the bottom line of his learning was this. The bottom line message that he gave us is he says, that which I feared most has come upon me. And when you start from a foundation recognizing, and by the way, you talked about what you've missed, we've got probably 800 or 900 shows. We got 3 years of shows you can go back to, and we go into depth into everything we're talking about here. But in essence, what we're saying is you and I are energetic beings. If I hold, are there atrocities done by other human beings? Absolutely. Absolutely unbelievable, horrific, disgusting, terrible, you know, negative, unlawful, unconscionable things are done by human beings. But when somebody does something unconscionable and aims it toward me, their behavior toward me is not the cause of my pain. What's going on inside of me is the cause of my pain. And when I hold pain, one of the things I used to do fairly regularly, this goes back about 25 years ago, is I used to speak at a conference called Global Science. And there was a gentleman there named Marcel Vogel, who was a 23-year senior scientist from IBM. Marcel introduced at the conference a camera that he had that, as a physicist, it took a picture of high-energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought, literal energetic patterns. And the conclusion we come to from that is, oh, so if I hold pain in me, I'm radiating and setting up something to happen in my life out of that. Does that mean I'm to blame for what happens in my life? No. But what it does is if I choose to take responsibility, I can recapture and change the part of my mind that keeps the pattern of the pain going. I can be freed from it. Again, you go back to the ancient Aramaic, and it says in those scriptures, you know, take care of the heart, for out of it are the issues in life. And that word heart has been totally misunderstood in our culture. The word heart doesn't mean the physical organ. The word heart is the unconscious or the dissociated mind. And as long as I hold a part of me hidden from me, guess who's coming to dinner? It's going to be somebody who's going to play that out with me. And when I choose to step up and start to change those parts of my mind, then the people who show up in my life show up differently because on an energetic level, I am a different resonant frequency. I'm a different energetic pattern, and my energetic pattern brings out something different in them. And as
so,
I climb out of the... Go ahead.
You and your colleague sound like wonderful humans that I am sure my family would interact with in a peaceful, harmonious way, and that is sensational. But I find it hard to fathom that you would not consider the fact that they are actually humans who are violent for various reasons. Some are born with brain abnormalities that lead to them being violent, aggressively so. Others, due to their diet and chemical imbalances, become violent. I don't see how from any logical position we can then say, well, you know, if I am only thinking good thoughts and kumbaya, that the killers coming toward me or the rapist going in the community raping young children or the priest raping young children, somehow that child will be protected because they are thinking, okay, this person coming toward me has find a happy place and they won't do anything. I don't see the connection at all. I think you all are good people, don't get me wrong. But I think delusion factors into this because I see a lot of hurt in the world and that you're claiming that there would be no hurt if just those hungry children somehow thought of in their mind a Big Mac. The Big Mac won't appear. Or if the country's being raped by America, Europe, and even some dictators in Africa, those people would be fine if they just could read some Aramaic and find a happy place. I just don't get the
connection
at all.
Resembles. stuff. I'll interrupt you there and say that I never said anything that resembles what you're putting in your mouth, what you're saying. That here's what I said. I said we're creators. I said that we energetically participate in everything that happens in our lives. We change the energy patterns inside of us, then we change what we resonate into our space. I didn't say think happy thoughts and everything's going to be okay. If you have rage and guilt and grief and murder in your heart and you think happy thoughts, you're not going to have an okay thing happening. Your physiology is going to fall apart and you're going to die and people are going to come and beat up on you. What I'm saying is that and we're at a stage where, you know, about 7.5 billion insane minds that are not functioning as human beings on the planet, fully, that when we individually and collectively start to move inside of ourselves and remove, forgive the things that don't belong there, then we're going to begin the change of those patterns. Does that mean if I engage in, and get me really clear here, I'm not suggesting, ho-hum, let's just be positive thinkers. Actually, if you read my book, which you can do freely on my website, you'll see that I outline a disease that I call premature positive thinking. If I try to positive think on top of a negative foundation, I'm going to crash. There's going to be trouble. And this whole thing is predicated on the fact that we are, by nature, creators. Once I realize I'm a creator, and everybody loves the idea that they're a creator when things are going well, but when they're not going so well, they always know what the problem, who the problem is, and it's always somebody else. What we're offering is nobody shows up in your space that doesn't match the energetic patterns that you hold. And when you start to change the energetic patterns, and that's what first century Hermetic forgiveness empowers you to do, then people start to show up differently. Let me share a story. This is one that Dr. Tim brought to us a couple of years back out of a book that he was reading, and the name of the book isn't coming to me at the moment, but, you know, I hear you. The atrocity is done. You know, I can remember when I was a kid reading the book Black Like Me and how insane it is. But here's a true story that comes. It was written by a medical doctor who was one of the ones who liberated the concentration camps in Nazi Germany. And when he went into the camps, there was one particular man who stood out to him, and the population was from all over Europe, but primarily was from, if I remember correctly, from Poland. And there was one man there who this doctor had made a mental note to himself. This guy must have just come into the camps recently because he's so healthy, he's so vital, he's so strong. You know, he must be a newbie here. And over time, he got to meet guy and spend time with him. And this guy was actually one of the first people who were brought into that concentration camp. He had been there, if I remember correctly, for 6 years or more. And when he started to hear his story, this man was an attorney in Poland, and the Nazis came in and they lined up everybody in his town, including his wife and I forget how many children he had, and literally machine gunned them to death. He begged them to kill him too, and they wouldn't because he was bilingual. He spoke German and Polish, so he was useful to them. And this medical doctor who writes about, and Tim, I'm sure you'll remind me the name of the book, my brain isn't there right now, but this medical doctor who writes about this story or this conversation with this man says that what he told him was, as an attorney, he had seen what hate had done to people. And he decided, as he was standing there watching his wife and children be murdered in front of his eyes, that he had two choices. He was either going to hate or he was going to love, and he chose to love. He was the only person in the camp that was still in good physical health after 6 years in that camp. And with all the warring factions of the people who were in the camp from all the different nations that had been, you know, bamboozled and stolen out of their homes and had their property stolen. I mean, you want to talk about rape and pillage. There isn't much that compares with what the Nazis did to the Jews there and to the Christians there. It wasn't the Jews. There's not much that compares with that, the horrendous, the insanity of it. And this man was friends with virtually everybody in the camp, where most everybody were, you know, their own little warring faction and trying to get their scrap of bread. And he lived in a different world because he made a choice. So my offering is, And I don't expect anybody to take this, I mean, looking at the violence and the viciousness and the insanity of the world, to take this hook, line, and sinker. Here's what I would suggest. First of all, don't believe a word I'm saying. But I'd invite you to go to our website, which is www.whyagain.org. And there's a bullseye, white and red bullseye in the middle of the page. Click that link on that bullseye, and it'll take you to a whole series of links. The first thing it'll do, it'll give you chapter 24 of my book that explains the forgiveness process. The second thing is a link to the actual worksheet, forgiveness process that we're talking about. And then there are 6 radio shows where we've walked somebody through the whole forgiveness process, giving them instructions on how do I go inside of me and find the part of me that's involved in what's happening in my life and change it. And I just invite you to take it, do some of those worksheets, and see if you are looking at things differently. I suspect you will be, as most of anyone who doesn't.
Cool. Yeah, I will go to the site, and I want to commend you regarding mentioning the man that was in the Nazi camp who seemed healthier and probably was than everyone else. I just want to also remind you that there are things called pheromones, and there are other chemicals in our body when we keep a positive disposition that lead to us not only feeling senses of euphoria, but also more positive, less cancer, and less stress. But that does not mean that then we can say, well, because he thought happy, great thoughts, and loved everyone, that it meant that he was doing the greatest thing, because I would say rebellion against oppression is great. It does come with its side effects, maybe to health, but I think resisting imperialism and sexism and bigotry, as opposed to being the group on the sidelines that tell the victims of brutality, hey, you know, just forgive and forget. I have never forgiven people who have abused me, but it has not impacted my life negatively because I meditate, and I realize that I rationally find the reason to say, you know what, it was not my fault. So, and my health has not been compromised at all. But I will check the website. It sounds interesting, but I believe that hate has a place, and revenge has a place, and even holy books. I can't think of one that doesn't say people have a right to take a guilty party and respond. And if you're going to respond, I'm not saying you have to respond, you know, in an over-the-top way, but you do have the right to say, I've been raped and I want justice. And some people could say, and I'm angry about it. I've been through a lot, and I'm not forgiving anyone that's abused me, but I'm not.
I'm going to ask you to hold your conversation there for a second, and I'm going to just interject once again. You're listening to things that I'm not saying. There are ideas showing up in your mind that you're attributing to my words that don't have anything to do with my words. I specifically would offer to you and have never forgive anyone for anything. When you say, oh, well, you just forgive and forget, like it's kind of, you know, offhand, and that's not what I'm suggesting. I'm suggesting that you go in, and I would suggest that anyone who's ever, you know, you talked about a punch in the testicles, you never forgive the person who did that. But you better clean up the rage in you about that, or you're going to find some deleterious effects on your physiology. And as you clean that up, as you shift through that, as you engage in that worksheet process, let's have ongoing continuing conversation, because you're going to see a whole new world open up. And I'm delighted. I love the energy with which you're coming forward and your thoughts. And if it works for you tomorrow, tomorrow I'm going to be on an airplane. Dr. Tim is going to do the show. But on Wednesday, I expect we're going to be settled in Costa Rica with a phone connection and we can get on the show. I would love to carry on the conversation and interact and sow more seeds about what it is that we're saying and talking about. It is not about forgiving others. It is not in the least about forgiving and forgetting. Nothing whatsoever to do with that. And our show is down to the wire, so I hope maybe on Wednesday we can have another conversation. It's a delight to meet you. And
thank you.
Everybody, give me the best gift you can possibly give to the world. Have the best gift of your eternal life. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present 12-step internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.
Evolving continuously.